Hi, friends. Welcome to another bonus episode of the Lessons Unlocked podcast. I'm your host, Colleen McCracken, and this episode is going to be a little bit more of a story time vibe, a little more personal. So if that's not what you're here for, our regularly scheduled content will be out soon. But if you're interested in hearing a little bit about my first professional audition experience, I'm really excited to share it with you guys. I feel like professional auditions have so much secrecy surrounding them. And maybe I'm about to find out like that there's a reason behind that and I'm about to be banned from taking auditions forever or something. At least that's my paranoia. But I think we should talk about it because, I don't know, no one does. And it's kind of scary to take your first audition. I think it would be a lot less scary if we were all just like open about the process. So I recently took my first professional audition. Now, this isn't like the first audition of my life. I've done auditions for undergrad, for grad school. And then in school, I had to do ensemble placement auditions. And throughout high school and my undergrad, I did youth orchestras, so I had to audition for those. So it's not like I'd never auditioned before. I just never done a professional one before, and I wasn't sure how different it was going to be. And I would say it was pretty similar to one of my youth orchestra auditions. It was similar to my experience auditioning for the Young People Symphonic Orchestra at Webster University, which I loved playing in that orchestra so much. I won their concerto competition, did my first concerto with them. I absolutely adore that conductor, Dr. Jackson, or Mr. Jackson. I don't think he's a doctor. Maybe he is. Mr. Jackson, if you're listening to this, I apologize if I got your title wrong. But anyway, that audition process, it wasn't blind, and it involved like talking a little bit with the conductor. Not formally, just like small talk as you're doing the audition. So that was the most similar to this professional audition. Now, I expected this audition to be the most like my experience auditioning for the St. Louis Symphony Youth Orchestra, because they model that off of kind of the expectation for professional auditions, which is that you're going to like walk on stage, there's a big black curtain, they're behind them being the judges, the jury panel. They would be behind that curtain. You would not be allowed to speak. There'd be a proctor in there to make sure you didn't speak, or for you to like ask a question to if something went wrong, or you know, whatever. And thankfully I knew in advance that the audition wouldn't be blind. But I only knew like 3 days in advance that I wouldn't be blind, so I got a little bit freaked out about it. But to take the story back to the start, this audition was brought to my attention by a friend of mine, just through like flute connections. I found out about this audition before it was even updated on the website. So I reached out and I asked what the repertoire was going to be, and they told me. So I started preparing, and as I started preparing, I kind of got psyched out and I was like, this is a lot of repertoire. I don't know, for some reason I was expecting the repertoire to be similar to youth orchestra audition repertoire, where it's like a solo piece and maybe three excerpts. And this was a solo piece and like eight excerpts. So it just felt like a lot to me. And now that I've done it, going forward, I'll be expecting more extensive repertoire lists for auditions. But for this one, I was just like, this is so much. And it has Firebird on there, and I hadn't worked on Firebird before, really. I touched on it a little bit in my undergrad degree, but I didn't like prepare it to the ability of having a successful audition with it. So it was time to pick that back up. And also, a fun twist, for the first 2 weeks of prepping for the audition, I prepared the 1911 version of Firebird, because that is what was on the list originally sent to me. And then when I emailed to confirm my audition time, about, I think it was 2 weeks before the audition, I got a response back like, yay, yes, you're confirmed to audition. By the way, we actually want the 1919 Firebird. I, first of all, was so frustrated because I had now wasted 2 weeks learning the wrong version. And it's not like they're similar. They are incredibly different. So that was just, I was immediately like, ugh, now I'm 2 weeks behind. For some reason, I felt like everyone else was going to have already been preparing the correct edition, the 1919. But like, how would they have known? Like, I didn't know. Like, looking back, that was kind of an unreasonable thought, an unhelpful thought. But so I was like, I had a little cry fest for just a few minutes about it because I was feeling super stressed out. And then I got to work. And the 1919 edition is what I had worked on a little bit in undergrad. So some of the work that I'd done like 4 years ago was still there, which was great. So it's not like I had to start from complete scratch. Like I had to start with the 1911 version. And yeah, I felt not, I didn't feel great about Firebird just because it's one of those excerpts where everyone's like, oh my God, it's so hard. Firebird's the worst. It's, you know, impossible to do well. And I think what contributes to that perception is that it's not a piece. It's not an excerpt that sounds good when executed correctly. Because like Stravinsky wasn't really going for sounding good. He was going for vibes. So at least that's my opinion. Any musicologists out there who disagree, feel free to disagree with me in the comments of this podcast or reach out to me directly and we can discuss. But in my opinion, Firebird, that excerpt is more giving vibes than beautiful, luscious, melodic intent. So, yes, Firebird. I got in my head about it and whatever. Worked really, really hard on that excerpt. But that was just one of like 8 excerpts. And this was a flute and piccolo audition. So I had to do excerpts for both. Which is maybe why the list felt so extensive, actually. I don't know. I don't know what's normal because this is the only audition I've taken. So I guess once I take my second audition, I'll have something to compare it to. But for now, all I have is youth orchestras, and youth orchestras ask fewer pieces of music in the audition. So anyway, got this audition confirmed, was working on it, and I'll go through the repertoire that I had to prepare. So I had to prepare the entirety of Peter and the Wolf. Flutists know that there are 3 main excerpts for Peter and the Wolf, but there are some other somewhat challenging parts in there that I decided would be worth taking a look at in case that I had to play those. So I really did prepare all of Peter and the Wolf. And the first excerpt of Peter and the Wolf, which is the very first flute entrance, used to be my best excerpt. Like, I was so good at it. I was so confident. I could play it from memory. It was wonderful. And while preparing for this audition, the excerpt decided to betray me. And it was like, we aren't friends anymore, and you suck. I was like, okay, Peter, thanks so much. I really appreciate this. But thankfully, in the audition room, it did not betray me. It all came back. But for the 2 weeks leading up to the audition, excerpt 1 of Peter and the Wolf was an absolute mess. And it was freaking me out so bad. Because I'm like, okay, I'm working so hard on Firebird. I shouldn't have to work very hard on Peter and the Wolf because I know it. But why is Firebird low-key sounding better than Peter and the Wolf? Like, this makes no sense. I've been studying Peter and the Wolf for years. So that was really silly. So we had to do all of Peter and the Wolf. We did the last two movements of Bach's Orchestral Suite Number 2, the Minuet and the Bad Marie. Now, with auditions and Baroque music, I get a little bit stressed out about ornamentation because some people in this world have very intense opinions on ornamentation. And in my opinion, it's really not that deep because the composer's been dead for hundreds of years. But for some people, there is an ornamentation Bible. And if you are not following whichever ornamentation Bible they subscribe to, you're getting point stalked. So I was most nervous about ornamentation. I was fine with the notes and the rhythms and the dynamics and the phrasing and all of the standard stuff. But with Baroque ornamentation, I just get so paranoid because some people are like, you didn't do enough. And then other people will be like, you did way too much and you're actually being really disrespectful to Bach. And I'm like, well, first of all, kind of hard to disrespect a dead person, specifically through the playing of their music. I think if Bach knew that his stuff was still being played today, regardless of how it was being played, I think he would be pleased that it stood the test of time. And I don't think he would care that much about ornamentation or Baroque style. He'd probably spend a lot of time freaking out about how different the flute is or how we have cars. This would not be his biggest concern. Anyway, that's just my opinion. We had Bach. We had Firebird. We had Peter and the Wolf. And we had Brahms 4. Brahms 4, it was just the classic solo at the 3-2. And I'd been studying that for years, so I wasn't super worried about it. I knew that was going to be fine. So I don't have a whole lot to say about the Brahms excerpt, other than everyone teaches it differently. Yeah, every person I've studied it with has given me different interpretations, but they all lead to the same interpretation. They're all going for the same thing, but they're all going about it differently. So it's interesting to study with different people. I recommend studying that excerpt specifically with different people because something someone says will finally like make it all make sense. And it just depends like how they say it, but really everyone's going for the same thing. When they teach that excerpt, they just go about it differently. Now, the next excerpts were for piccolo. So for piccolo, we had Tchaikovsky 4. And I had not studied that one before. That was a new one for me. And then we had Stars and Stripes Forever, the orchestra version, which is in a different key than the band version. I had played the band version a few times, and I was in a municipal band, played it there. The band at a summer festival did it. So I've done the band version, but I had not done the orchestra version. And let me tell you, switching down a half step is harder than it seems. Like, it really didn't seem like it should be that hard, but it was so hard to, like, retrain my fingers and my brain to not, like, I had to retrain myself to hear it differently, and then I had to retrain my fingers, and my fingers were not about it. My fingers were definitely fighting me on this. So the last piccolo excerpt was Bizet's L'Arlésienne, the first and last movements. And I had not studied that on piccolo before. I've studied the famous flute excerpts for it, but not the piccolo stuff. So that was also new. So all the piccolo stuff was pretty much new. And in addition to all those excerpts, I had to prepare a flute solo, which I chose Alfred Perelieu's Ballade. If you've listened to the podcast before, you know it's one of my favorite pieces. It's a piece that I feel really confident on. I won a competition with it once. I've played it in recitals. First of all, I just adore the piece. I think it's one of the best pieces for the flute. And that might be an unpopular opinion. Like, It's a solid piece. It's not everyone's favorite, but it's my favorite. I really love it. And then there was also, I was told there would be sight reading. So to practice sight reading, I would sight read little duets and make little TikTok videos, just of me playing different stuff. Most of it was in a more easy, fun stuff. I really didn't sight read anything that hard, which maybe I should have sight read stuff harder, but we'll sight read harder stuff, but we'll get into that a little bit. So I do all this preparation and my teacher has me do a mock audition, which is always good to do. And the mock audition, it was my teacher and another teacher, and I was so nervous for this mock audition. There's just something about auditioning for the professors at your school that makes you more nervous than auditioning for strangers, because you want your professors to think well of you. Like, you want to do a good job. And I just knew that I was going to mess something up. And like, you know, I had this false perception that my professor and this other professor would both be like, dang, like, she's really going to embarrass herself at this audition, which is not a helpful thought. And it's not a thought with much substance. It's not a thought that was likely truthful. So not helpful. But anyway, I did the mock audition and it went really bad. My teacher was very nice about it. She was like, oh, you did a, that was great. There's just a couple things, but you know, you're really prepared and you're going to be great. And the other professor was like, so here's everything that you did wrong. And I'm like, okay, so we've got two ends of the spectrum happening here. And then we've got me in my head, who is just incredibly disappointed in myself and my performance in the mock audition. Everything that could have went wrong, went wrong. It was awful. And I texted my mom about it afterwards. And I was like, mock audition was really bad. And she was like, well, you got the bad one out of the way. And I was like, you know, I used to believe that. But for some reason, I was like, no, clearly that this is going to be just how it is. And I'm going to suck in the real audition. Even though I've always been a person who like has a bad dress and then a great performance. And a mock audition's like a dress. Dress is short for dress rehearsal for our friends. I'm sorry. Yeah, so I was feeling very not good when going in to the audition. So my mock audition was the day before my actual audition, which I'd probably recommend a few more days in between. So then you can like apply any comments you get from the mock audition. Or if you're doing a mock audition that close to the audition day, ask for no comments. Say like, I'm doing this for the experience. I'm doing this to practice being nervous. I don't want any feedback or comments on this. And normally if you say that, people will respect it. So the next day, it was a Saturday. My audition was scheduled for 4 p.m. And I kind of spent the whole day like getting ready for it. Like, I wanted to make sure that my hair was done and I had good makeup. I did my little under eye patches. I did a cute little get ready with me video on TikTok so that I could like kind of talk some of my feelings out, which was, I think, a pretty good method. Did not put gas in my car before I left, which I probably should have. So I had to get gas on the way back, but it gave me an excuse to get a sweet treat. I'm going out of order. That's fine. We'll circle back. But I decided on my outfit the day before. So I put on my audition outfit and my audition shoes. And my shoes are a little bit broken. So I actually, after the audition, ordered new shoes. Because I've been wearing the same shoes for 3 or 4 years. And the shoes before those I wore for 3 or 4 years. So they were
quite damaged. So it was time. I still haven't thrown them out yet because the new shoes haven't come in. But I'll be getting some cute new Concert Black shoes very soon. So I put on my outfit and grab my little fanny pack. I wanted to do the fanny pack instead of my nice purse because the fanny pack fits in my bag. And I wasn't sure if I would have to leave my stuff in a shared space. And if so, I wanted to like hide my money. And not that I carry a lot of money, but like hide my wallet and stuff in my flu bag. Because I don't know, I just feel a little bit less anxious. But so I drove for an hour to get to where the audition was. And I left. So my audition was at 4. I left at 2:10. And after parking and everything, I entered the building around 3:15. So I was quite early. And it was actually really funny. Like, as I walked in, this guy was like, "Colleen?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he was like, "Colleen McCracken?" And I was like, "Yeah." And then he was like, "You're here for the audition." And I was like, "Yes, I am." And he said, "Flute." And I said, "Yeah, flute." And then eventually he finally introduced himself. Very nice guy. But he was the person assigned to like find me and take me up to the warm-up room. But I was just like so confused. I'm like, am I famous? Is this what's happening? Did they publish the list somewhere? And everyone is like waiting for all the flutists to show up to be like, "Hey, you're auditioning." I was so confused. But no, it was just a guy doing his job. So he took me up to the warm-up space. It was in this gorgeous big room with lots of windows, which I appreciated. And when I got in there, there was an oboist sitting there, and he was the only other person in there. And his audition was at 3:45. So he was also pretty early. And I chatted with him a little bit. Very nice guy. When I am nervous, I get chatty. So it was nice that there was someone else in the audition room to chat with a little bit. I really appreciate that. And he was also willing to chat with me. Not everyone is in a talkative mood but right before an audition. So if he didn't want to talk, I would have completely understood. But it was really nice that we got to have an actual conversation. But I was in there for so long that like between our little conversations, I'd just be scrolling through TikTok, wasting time because I didn't want to overplay. And eventually, a flutist came in, and she had just finished her audition, and I think she was one of the people who isn't very talkative at auditions, which, again, I totally respect, but, like, I said hi and tried to make a little bit of small talk, and she was nice. She just wasn't super into it, so I didn't push it, but when she came in, pretty shortly after, the oboist got taken in to go audition. I don't know why they put an oboist in the middle of the flutes. I think it actually may have worked in my favor because I didn't have to hear a flutist warming up while I was warming up. So I couldn't get psyched out about like, "Oh my God, her tone is so good," or "Oh, her Peter and the Wolf sounds perfect and mine sounds like Dookie." So that was a huge like mental advantage at least. So about 15 minutes later, my oboe friend came back and the proctor grabbed me and took me down to the audition room. We made a little bit of small talk on the way down and she mentioned that three flutists had to cancel their audition, and that helped with my nerves because I was like, "Oh, three fewer flutists competing with today. Like, that's unfortunate for them that something happened where they could no longer take the audition." But as a competitor, that's good news to hear. We get to the audition room, and I walk in, and I see the panel. It's not a blind audition, which I knew in advance. A friend of a friend had taken an audition with that orchestra before. So I was able to get a little bit of insight, and I knew that it wouldn't be blind. So I walk in, said hello. I'd met the principal flutist before, so I said it was good to see her again and kind of got settled. They had a chair with next to a stand. I chose to stand just because, I don't know, I'd feel really weird sitting. Like, I thought about it and I was like, are they going to think I'm weird if I stand? Should I ask if I can stand? And then I was like, girl, it's fine. Just stand and play. Like, it's not a big deal. And looking back, the chair was probably there for the oboist. Maybe he wanted to sit. Like, I don't know. So I come in and get settled. And I was the last person of the day. So I think there was like a little bit of like relief in the room that like after my audition, everyone could go home. Which is honestly a good vibe to have in the space. It's a lot better than having the like, okay, this is the first audition of 35 and then we'll have a lunch break. You know, it was a nice vibe in the room. So I was asked if I wanted to start with flute or piccolo and I said flute. And they wanted me to start with my flute solo since I started with flute. And so I played the Parolue. I was so happy with how it went. It was like a dream situation. They cut me off exactly where I wanted them to cut me off. Love. Everything went really well. I was just super proud of my performance of that solo piece. After that, they asked for Peter and the Wolf. Now, Peter and the Wolf was giving me so much trouble that I was like, okay, whatever. And they just said, let's hear Peter and the Wolf. So I started it at the beginning with excerpt one, the one that I'd been sucking at. And it went pretty well. I was actually pretty happy with how it went. Peter and the Wolf came back to me. We're friends again. We aren't beefing anymore. I was happy with how that went. And they didn't ask for anything else. They literally just had me do the first excerpt of Peter and the Wolf, which was good because the third excerpt of Peter and the Wolf was also giving me trouble. Now, if they wanted to hear the second excerpt, that would have been fine because I actually felt the most confident about the second excerpt, but oh well. So they started with Peter and the Wolf, and this is where I forget which order everything else was in, so I'm just going to kind of tell you in no particular order. I want to say they asked for Bach next, but again, I don't really remember. So with Bach, they didn't have me do the minuet. They just had me do the Bad Nuit. And life-saving information, they wanted it without repeats. So I didn't have to ornament. I was so happy. All my stress about the Bad Nuit was gone because now it was like literally play what's on the page, which I did. And it went fine. So that was good. I don't remember if we did Brahms or Firebird next, but I'm going to say that we did Brahms next. So played Brahms. It went fine. Really nothing noteworthy happened. I played it how I play it. It was good. I was pleased. And then Firebird. I was so nervous for Firebird. But I low-key nailed it. It was, at the very least, it was my best run I've ever done of that excerpt. So I was very proud of myself when I was done. And that kind of wrapped up. No, wait. That did not wrap up the flute section because there was sight reading. So that wrapped up the prepared flute section. And then I was given a sheet of music to sight read. And this is where I thought I might have blown the audition because I did a really bad job with the sight reading. It was hard, and they had me do parts of it twice. They were like, can you just like do the rhythm even if you get the notes wrong? And I was like, oh my god, this is so embarrassing. Like, yeah, I'll try, I'm sorry. It was a humbling sight reading moment. So I need to practice sight reading complex rhythms more is what I've learned from that. But after the sight reading, they had me switch over to piccolo. And they asked if I'd prepared a piccolo solo, and I did not because it wasn't on the list. And they were like, totally fine. We weren't clear about that. Don't worry about it at all. So I was like, okay, fine. I guess it's not a big deal. It made me a little nervous just to say, like, no, I don't have X prepared. But they were really nice about it, so it was good. So I started with Bizet. And they only had me do part of the first excerpt. They didn't make me go on to the excerpt in the final movement, which was great because the excerpt in the final movement was really long, so there was like a lot to prepare there. And the first movement, it wasn't quite as much. And it went pretty well. I don't remember anything that upset me in my playing with that. After that, we did Stars and Stripes Forever. And my Stars and Stripes did not go super well. I was not pleased with it. I messed up some of the trills and I took it too fast, which impacted my ability to play some of the trills. So they actually had me do that excerpt twice, which really freaked me out because I was just like, what if I don't sound better the second time? What if I sound worse the second time? And then I just totally blow it, you know? So that was on my mind a little bit. We ended with Chike 4. This is where things went less than great for me. I start Chike 4 and it's going fine. It's going fine. And all of a sudden, wrong notes are coming out, but my fingers are correct. So I stop in the middle of the excerpt and I say, I'm so sorry. I don't know what's going on with my piccolo. And I take a look at it and try to figure it out. And the principal flutist goes, it sounds like you have water in a key. Do you want some pad paper? And I said, yes, I think that has to be what it is. Thank you so much. So I go through the piccolo with a pad paper on every single key. I don't see water come out anywhere, but I was like, okay, maybe it came out and I missed it or something. I was in an audition headspace, so I wasn't thinking super logically. So I try again. The notes are still coming out wrong. So I stop again and I say, again, I'm so sorry. And finally I'm like, okay, I just need to like blow a bunch of air in each of the tone holes to make sure that I actually get the water out. So I blow air, get the water out, clean the water up with the pad paper. And for the third time, I start Tchaikovsky 4. And it wasn't great. The third time of playing the excerpt in front of the panel was not great, probably because I was really freaked out by that point. And it just wasn't as well as I was capable of playing. So I was pretty disappointed in my playing of that. And they cut me off before the end of the excerpt. For our friends who are familiar with this piece, there are two excerpts that make up the piccolo part of the third movement of Chike 4. And the first one is where all the water stuff happened and they had me go like straight into the second one. So I started the second one. I made it not even halfway through and they cut me off right after I played a wrong note too. Cause I was so nervous. I played a B natural when I should have played a B flat. And they were like, all right, thank you so much. And in my brain, I was just like, crap. Like, that was what blew it. They heard the wrong note and they were like, you're done. So, but I was still so proud of myself for my flute playing in that audition that I was like, all right, thank you so much. This has been great. Thank you, thank you. Walked out, head held high. Went back upstairs to the warm-up room, packed up my stuff, and I was just really proud of myself. I was expecting to cry after, and I didn't, so that was nice. I left feeling like I did a pretty good job for my first ever professional audition, with all of the fear that surrounds it and kind of the expectation of like no one wins their first audition. I felt pretty good. I was like, okay, I went in there and I proved that I'm really good at the flute. I didn't necessarily prove that I'm super great at the piccolo, but, you know, my tone on the piccolo was good. My intonation on piccolo was good. Just my piccolo excerpts weren't totally perfect. So who knows what they thought of my piccolo playing, but I definitely showed that I'm a good flutist. So after I drove a little ways out of town, and then I got gas because I was almost out of gas because I didn't get it on the way there. Silly me. And I got a Diet Coke, little sweet treat. I got some Skittles candy, and I was like, okay, I did my audition. I got my sweet treat, and I'm going to go home and relax. And, they didn't tell me when I was going to hear, but I had overheard the proctor telling the oboe candidate that, he'd get an email early in the week. So I kind of figured I'd hear something Monday or Tuesday. So I texted my friends and I called my mom and I texted my teacher and told them all about the audition and the water in the key incident. Oh my gosh, it was so frustrating. And they were like, you know what? Good for you for like recovering from that. And I'm like, well, I didn't fully recover from that, but we can save that. Maybe we don't have to tell people that I didn't completely recover from that. But I went about life for the next couple days and, I got an email from them while I was at work. I work in a study abroad office, so I was in my little office. For some reason, I was like, oh, I should probably check my personal email and not just the work email. So I saw an email that said, blank symphony offer. But I just saw the first two words, blank symphony, and I was like, oh my God, this is the email. And I assumed it was going to be a you didn't get it email, but I was hoping that it was going to be a you didn't get it, but you're on our sub list email. And I open it and I'm reading, and upon first glance, it's a pretty short email. So I was like, okay. And then I read it and it's like, we'd like to offer you the position of flute 3/piccolo. What? I won? Oh my goodness. So it had, the like schedule attached. It had the like financial information on there. And I was just, I could not believe that I won my first professional audition. It's still crazy. Like I still don't think it's fully set in, and it's been, I got the news on Monday and it's currently Friday. So that was crazy. So immediately I called my mom. Before I even open the schedule or like really read the email thoroughly, I pretty much just saw like, we'd like to offer you the position. And I called my mom and I was just so thrilled. And then I called my dad and my sister and texted my friends and my teacher. It was just so exciting. And then the next day I replied to the email accepting the position. So I will be starting my first professional symphony orchestra job in the fall on flute and piccolo. And I'm really just so grateful that they saw a good piccolo player in me, because I really didn't feel like I showed my best capabilities in the audition on piccolo. So I'm glad that they saw through the nerves and the getting thrown off with the water in the key. I'm really glad that they saw through that. This has been me telling you about my first audition. It was a positive experience even before I got the results. So this is your sign to take your first audition, because it turns out you might actually win it. This has been a bonus episode of the Lessons Unlocked podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. And if you haven't, our regular content will be back out soon. So no worries there. I hope you all have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend, and I wish you all the best. Bye.